Firstly, if we could talk about the Korean state banquet. I know it probably feels like a while ago now, but that was a massive thing for Kingston and New Malden.
Well, it was a huge honour to be invited to a state banquet at Buckingham Palace. And Emily, my wife, and I had a great time listening to the King speaking, of course, and also the President of Korea. I was very lucky during that state visit to meet the President of Korea sort of in a one-to-one. And President Yoon is an interesting person. And we talked a lot about things, talked about Korean residents in Kingston, as well as geopolitics. And I gave him a present of a Tottenham Hotspur shirt with the name Son Heung-min on it, which he was very pleased about. And about a week later, we had a present sent by the president to me of 20 kilograms of kimchi.
Wow.
It was quite an event. We didn't have any kimchi at the palace, but we've been eating a lot of kimchi.
When you talked to him and obviously mentioned Kingston, was that something he was receptive to?
Yeah, very much so. I think Korea has really come of age. You know, we've known about the wonderful culture there because we're very fortunate in New Malden in particular to have so many Koreans in our area with their businesses, the contribution they make to our schools and so on. But I think with things like K-pop, you know, Blackpink and BTS and indeed football with players like Son Heung-min, I think Korea is now better understood and known about. People are more aware of Korea. And I think that's a huge opportunity for Kingston as the home of most British Koreans. And I'd love to see those ties developed and strengthened.
When you say seeing ties developed and strengthened, what kind of things are we talking about? Is it financial or is it cultural?
I think the best way to do it is probably through the university. And it's very, very early stages, let me stress that. But Kingston University, I think, would be keen to look at what's possible. Because I think if you do it through something like an education institution, you can see how undergraduates and graduates might spend time at each university. That could lead to, you know, not just education opportunities, but research, innovation, and then to business and so on. And on the back of that, yes, the cultural links too. So very, very early days. I don't want to set hairs running, but I've been initial exploration of whether or not through the universities we could take the link further forward.
What would they get out of it partnering with us?
I think they're very keen to build the links. I mean, when I was a trade minister, I was really focused on that trade deal. We got a trade deal with Korea. Then we were in the EU. It was an EU-Korea free trade agreement. It was a real major step forward. And so those trade benefits that are mutual, that we benefit, they benefit. And I think their students will benefit from coming here and British students from the university would benefit from going there. So it's when you're making these partnerships, you're right. You've got to make sure that both sides are getting something from it. But all the signs are that everyone's really keen to deepen what's already a great relationship. I mean, we've got two Korean councillors now on Kingston Council, Councillor Robert Kim, Councillor Elizabeth Park. And I think they're representing the Korean community that we have here and celebrating it.
Moving on, because something you were keen to speak about last time, and actually something that we're now being contacted by lots of people, is the services, children's oncology services, moving from the Marsden to the Evelina in central London. And last time I spoke to you, you were due to have a meeting with health bosses. Did that meeting happen, and what was the outcome?
Yeah, I and other Liberal Democrat MPs joined people from other parties to have a meeting with the minister and people involved in this debate about whether or not cancer services for children, specialist cancer services for children, transfer from where they are locally now at St George's and the Marsden up to central London to the Evelina. And I'm very sceptical about whether that's a good move or not. I think consolidating the services at St George's, which is what I think is the most obvious thing to do, would be a better thing. But better for the children, better for their families. I think it would be better for the oncology teams. You know, St George's has 25 years experience of delivering paediatric cancer care, unlike the Evelina. So St George's has got far more experience. You start looking at some of the financials, it's cheaper to do it at St George's. And for the families, I mean, traipsing up to central London, we all know the difficulties of getting up there, the extra costs of parking and all the rest of it. I think it would be much better myself if they were all consolidated at St George's. The public consultation's out at the moment. It's going to close very shortly on the 18th of December. People can log on now and see the consultation paper if they haven't already. And I would urge them to back St George's, to be honest.
It's always going to affect someone, isn't it? If you've got a very unwell child, you know, for argument's sake, the Evelina could be seen as more central for the whole of London rather than sending parents to either the Marsden in Sutton or St George's in Tooting.
Well, the Evelina is a great hospital. We've used it for our own son, so this is not against Evelina, right? It's a good hospital. The question, though, is what is the best of the two? And I've been convinced from the evidence I've seen that St George's has the edge, primarily because of the experience. I also think it'll be generally easier for parents, because the moment the services at St George's and the Royal Marsden are used by, you know, parents in South East London, in Surrey, in Sussex and Kent. And I think when you look at those travel arrangements, it will be better at St George's.
We've really sadly spoken to a few parents who say that when they take part in the consultation, that although they're going to do it, they don't have much confidence that their voices will be heard. We do tend to hear this a lot, you know, when people are told to take part in consultations and make their views known. But I think they feel it's a done deal. What would you say to those people?
Well, listen, I understand how sceptical they are. Nevertheless, I'd really urge them to do so. I mean, I was concerned that NHS England had already got a preferred option of the Evelina. But when we met the minister and we met the NHS bosses, we really pushed them hard on this. And they claimed, at least to us, that they had an open mind. And if that's true, I think we need to make our case. And therefore, for those parents, whatever their view is, and I'm not telling them they should to think for the Evelina or St George's. I've looked at the evidence. I think St George's is the better of the two options. And so I just urge people to have their say. And let's see if there is open mind. I hope there is.
The Rwanda vote on Tuesday, it went in Rishi Sunak's favour. Is that the end of it, as far as you're concerned, though?
No, the Conservatives are very badly split on this. They've made such a hash of immigration. They're now obsessed with this Rwanda idea, which is only ever going to deal with a tiny part of the problem they've allowed to get so bad. But they're totally divided about it. And although the Prime Minister managed to persuade enough people to back him last Wednesday, I didn't, because I think the scheme is very expensive and frankly unworkable. But it looks like they've kicked the can down the road. I think in the new year we'll see more Conservative divisions. And what frustrates me about this, I'll be frank with you, is we've got so many problems in our country, particularly around the NHS and care. And that should be a focus. Yet we've got a government that just is fighting amongst itself and not making progress, even on tackling some of the small boat problem.
A change of leadership when you're speaking to people, is that top of their worries at the moment?
I think people do want a general election, to be honest. I think they're fed up of this government. I speak to people who've always voted Conservative in the past and are not going to anymore, because they see a government that seems out of touch, doesn't seem to care, and is just divided and pretty incompetent. So I think people do actually want a general election. I mean, will the Conservatives end up in another leadership election? Well, who knows? They're so divided. One of the reasons they've had so many leaders and so many changes of ministers and such an unstable, chaotic government is because they can't agree amongst themselves. And frankly, when a party can't agree amongst itself, it's not fit to lead our great country.
I mean, Labour did go through this a few years ago with Jeremy Corbyn and Keir Starmer, and it has sort of levelled out. Do you not see the same thing happening for the Tories?
The other parties can look after themselves. As a leader of the Liberal Democrats, I'm proud of our party. We're united. We've got some very strong policies to deal with the cost of living, to deal with NHS, to deal with environmental problems, to deal with housing issues, and so on. When the next election comes, and I think it will next year, I think we will surprise people by how well we'll do. I'm very focused on my own constituency, Kingston Surbiton, and talking to people here about what they want to see. But across South West London, places like Wimbledon, places like Sutton, Coshot and Wallington, going to Surrey, Evesham, Welton, Guildford, Woking, we seem to be the ones who are on the up. Labour definitely can't win in any of those seats. You know, it's trailing poorly in third place, in not just in Kingston, in Wimbledon and Richmond and all of Surrey. And I think increasingly Labour's basically admitted that it can't win in these areas.
Yes, I was just going to say, last week it put out the non-battlegrounds, and it was Richmond Park, Kingston and Surbiton, Evesham, Walton, Epsom and Ewell.
Basically, almost everywhere in South East London, sorry, it's admitted by its own literature that it can't win. And I think that will focus people's minds, because lots of people just want the Conservative government out. As I was saying earlier, people who've been traditional lifelong Conservatives want them out, and Labour supporters clearly want them out. And people are looking to see which is the party in their constituency where their vote counts. Who's the party, who's the candidate who can beat the Conservative MP? And in almost all of our area, it's the Liberal Democrats. And so we're quite excited about the election, and we're getting a lot of support on the doorsteps, huge amount of support. I'm really, really encouraged.
I mean, the Lib Dems do really well, or have done really well in recent years in London. Are you confident that can carry through to the rest of the country? And if not, I mean, I know it's too early to talk election talk really, but would you consider, you know, if the option came ahead, going into another coalition?
Well, listen, I'm focused on preparing and leading the party into this coming general election and winning as many seats as we can. Almost all our seats in the country are against the Conservatives. There's two seats in Scotland against the SNP. There's one in Sheffield against Labour. But the vast majority of seats that I think we can win in the next election are against the Conservatives. And they're all over the country, actually. Clearly, in London and the South East, the so-called home counties, what I call the blue wall, we're the ones who can bash that down. But in the southwest, in the West Country, where we used to be strong, we're coming back there. In parts of the suburbs of Manchester, in Cumbria, in Sheffield, in Yorkshire, we're actually really beginning to pile on support. So I'm hopeful. But the one thing I'm not going to be is I'm not going to take voters for granted. We're going to work all the way through to close the polls, to win people's trust, show that we've listened to people, show that, you know, we share their concerns about the cost of living, about the NHS, about things like the environment, and that if they back us this time, we could be the party that makes a difference. If I'm honest with you, I don't think Labour by itself is going to be able to remove this government. I think it will require Liberal Democrats in the blue wall and beyond beating Conservative MPs to get this Conservative government out of office.
So I'm not going to be able to draw you in the exact words that a Lib-Labour coalition could be on the cards.
I'm just not focused on that. I'm focused on this election. You know, in my experience, this Westminster bubble discussion doesn't really cut the ice over voters. They want to know what you're going to do. If you're going to be the MP for their area, what are you going to do for their area? Are you going to work hard? Are you going to be a community champion? Or are you going to go, as so many Conservative MPs do, get elected and forget their constituents? And that's wrong. I don't think it's good for democracy. I think people have lost a lot of trust in politics as a result of that sort of behaviour. We've seen all the scandals and corruptions and crises under this government. People want a fresh start, and I think Liberal Democrats can offer that.